For A-State Connections, I'm Jonathan Raves. This is a second Saturday conversation with Arkansas State University's Chancellor, Dr. Kelly Danfus. And in this interview, I talked to Dr. Danfus about how the university is responding to COVID-19 and what impacts it might have to the fall semester. I interviewed Dr. Danfus over Zoom, and he gives this update.
Sure. So what we're doing now is kind of recovering from the spring semester. As you know, we went very quickly from face-to-face classes to online classes. And I think I got to give our faculty and staff tremendous credit for what they did to be able to pull that off. And also our students, who not only were they able to be successful in the virtual classroom now, but also showed a lot of empathy for our faculty and their instructors, who they realized, hey, this is not going to be a perfect environment. My class isn't going to look exactly like it did before. And they were very empathetic and understanding. But as I shared with the faculty and with the staff last couple of weeks in my town hall meetings with them, I don't think we have the luxury of being able to hope that our students will be as forgiving next time around if we have to do this. That means we have to be prepared to transition to all online again. I hope we don't. I hope it never happens. I hope we never have to make that kind of transition again. But if we do, we've got to be prepared for that. So that's what we started focusing on now. We have summer school going at the same time, so we're paying attention to summer school. But now we're turning our attention to what the fall semester will look like. And it's kind of exciting because it's new and challenging. But we're really working hard on making plans for the summer or for the fall semester.
So with something like this that is really, in our lifetimes, very unprecedented, you know, we haven't gone through something like this. You made a lot of decisions very quickly as things were going on. What did you learn from the process that you might be able to take into it if we have to go through this again?
Well, I think we all learned a lot about ourselves. I think our strengths and our weaknesses, and we learned a lot about the people around us. I think that's good. It's always good to know who you are and what you are and what you're capable of. Spend some time looking at how we process this, I think we can all benefit from this, because I think, you know, there's the old saying, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I'm not sure talking about, you know, that exact phraseology in the time of a pandemic is a great idea. But I think we all showed some resilience and we all, again, learned a lot about ourselves. But the other thing I learned was the importance of communication and making sure everyone knew what was happening. And I heard from people who work in other places, not necessarily universities, where there wasn't that kind of open communication, or if there was communication that people didn't trust the communication. And so building trust on the one hand and also being very open in your communication is very important. And, you know, you can build trust, but you can lose trust just like that by being false, by not being truthful with people, by not sharing people what you know. And I think there's so much anxiety around this pandemic right now and people's response to the pandemic. And part of that anxiety is uncertainty. And so the most important thing I learned was to make sure everybody knows what's happening with our budget, with our response, how we're getting prepared, how we're making sure we're keeping people safe, all those things, everyone needs to know all about that. For example, just today, I've had some conversations about the ventilation process inside the buildings. And it's very complicated. I'm no expert on HVAC and all that, but we have people on our campus who are experts and who are nationally recognized leaders in keeping buildings safe and making sure that the air is filtered the right way. And at some point, and the last email I sent just before I got on with you was, in due time, we'll have to figure out a way to get this message to our campus, because employees and our students will want to know what we're doing. And in some ways, it's enough to know we're paying attention to it. In some ways, and sometimes, you want to know a little bit more detail than that. But again, it's all about communication and making sure people know what the process is. And know that we're paying attention to it. If someone asked, hey, what about ventilation? And if I said, yeah, don't worry about it, we're taking care of it, that can cause some problems in time. It's much better to say, hey, we've got David Handwerker, who's one of the nation's leading experts in this area, and he's paying a lot of attention to what's going on nationally, and we're monitoring levels, and we know what we're doing, and we've got a plan moving forward, that's a way better response than either I haven't thought about it or don't worry about it. It's not your problem.
Right. And as you continue to move forward and as you look at getting the campuses ready for the fall semester when you're going to have a lot of students on campus, what kind of goes into those decisions? Like there are parents who are wondering, will my student be able to be on campus in the fall? How will my student be safe in the fall? And numerous other questions like that. How do you go about making those decisions to kind of get ready for the fall semester?
Yeah, and I think it starts with having a value set before you move forward. And the value set describes what you think is the most important thing that needs to happen on your campus. And for us, it's the health, safety, and welfare of all of our students and all of our employees. And every decision has to be put up against that mark. And if we have a situation where this seems unsafe or might make people less healthy, then we have to figure out ways to get around that to not do it. And so we've created a set of task forces that cover every area of our campus, all the way from what I call return to learn, having students come back to campus, and everything that goes on there. That's what does move-in day look like? What are residence halls look like? What does the cafeteria look like in this new COVID response? We see how people are going to restaurants now, where they're wearing masks when they walk inside, but when they get their food, they can take their mask off. We've got to have a process for everything. And there are some guidelines out there for how higher education can manage this, but they're very broad guidelines. So we need specific guidelines. That's why I created those task forces, one focused on students, one focused on academics, one focused on employees, one focused on our relationship with our community, because we have a lot of people come onto our campus throughout the semester, and then one focused on athletics, because we got to figure out how does football work? How does soccer and volleyball, our fall sports work, our track and field sports? How do we get people back and forth? How do we manage the budget when we've had a tremendous shortfall in ticket sales? Those kinds of things have to be all worked out. So every one of our cabinet members has a task force that they're overseeing. And what they're doing first is identifying all the questions. And then they're identifying people who can answer the questions. And then by July 1st, we will have a return to learn plan in place. Now, some of those plans are already in place. They're already working. Athletics has completed their plan already. Academics is already doing theirs. They've got a plan that we're going to release this week. And so, but some of them have to be flexible too. So for example, you might say, we're going to start the semester off looking like this, but we may have to, you know, change into this later on, or we may have more restrictions or we may have less restrictions. We just have to create very flexible plans.
So do you see students being in classrooms, in physical classrooms, when the fall semester starts?
Yes, I do. That's the plan. We will have students in the classroom. It may look different. They may be wearing masks, for example, in the classroom, or they may wear masks in the classroom and then take them off when class is in session. Right now, the state guidelines allow for lectures to take place with if people are socially distanced by 6 feet, and the speaker doesn't have to wear a mask. And so as long as you're 12 feet away from someone. And so we're going to – now, those are guidelines mostly for – right now for like concerts and so on. They're not really guidelines for the classroom. And so we may have different guidelines for the classroom later on, but we're taking, for example, my class, I have 88 students in my class and I have 88 seats. That's why I'm maxed out at 88 students. And so we're going to move my class into an auditorium that has 300 seats and we'll make the students, you know, spread out, and I can teach the same class there. It will be different because we'll be spread out. I won't be able to have easy conversations with people, but it's one semester. I hope it's one semester where we get where we're going to work through this process, and we will try to spread people out as much as possible. But the plan is to have people back in campus as much as possible, on campus, in classes. Now we're moving towards kind of a hot, what's called high flex. So it's a flexible hybrid model. where some faculty might teach half the class, and that's, I actually do this in my class, where we meet in person for one day, and the rest of the work is online the rest of the week. And so you're getting that high touch interaction with a faculty member, but you're also doing work online. The nice thing about that high flex approach is if I get sick, or if a student gets sick, we can both keep up. Or if we have to move all online again, I can transition that very quickly into an all online class, because I've already prepared that through the whole semester. And so that's kind of what it will look like this fall, I think. It will also allow us to have our labs, which is very high touch, interactive experiences. All of our laboratories we run online, or not online, but face-to-face. But we'll have to have physical distancing in there as well. Most of our labs have four or five or six students sitting around the table working on something, dissecting an animal or something like that. We may have to do that while we're all wearing gloves and wearing a mask. Well, it's probably a good idea to have that anyways when you're dissecting an animal, because most people are wearing gloves and masks when you're doing it.
Sure.
So you can probably do a lot of social distancing in those settings there as well. So that's what the provost office is working on, is in provost office working with faculty. This is a faculty. The faculty have to determine, in consultation with health officials and with Department of Health and so on, the faculty have to determine what this semester will look like. And I really believe in this, and our faculty are working really hard on trying to create as normal of a semester as possible.
Do you see the possibility of, if there is a where testing is needed on campus, we're having students that are starting to get sick and all of that. Do you see testing coming to campus and how to mitigate if there's any kind of an outbreak that could happen among students?
Yeah, the mitigation is the big part. Testing and contact tracing and mitigation are and being able to quarantine people is important. So we have 3,300 people living on campus on any given semester. What we've done is we've created some areas on our campus that we reserve for quarantine spaces for students who can't go home if they do get sick. And then we've also, if someone lives on campus and they get sick, they can go home. So there's this process for that as well, for quarantining. And so that will be a challenge for us. Trying to figure out how to test people and who to test is a challenge just operationally. Just think about this. Let's say we want to test everybody on Monday morning of every week. We have 9,000 people on our campus. If we spaced them out 6 feet apart and tested them all, it would take us all day to do it. We Right. wouldn't have the test for 2 days. We wouldn't have the results for 2 days unless they get something faster. And then what would that tell us if you're negative? If we found out on Wednesday that you're negative, you might have gotten infected on Monday afternoon by standing in line with all these people. Maybe the person next to you was infected, now you're infected. And so testing isn't the end all be all, but it will be important to be able to test certain areas. You might want to test all of Kays Hall, for example, if somebody got sick there, or if there was a reason for doing it, or all student athletes, or all students in this group over here, or whatever. And then the biggest thing, though, is once you find someone who's tested positive, is to do the contact tracing. Who have you talked to? Who have you been around? Who have been hanging around with for a while? And then you have to reach out to those people and ask them, you might want to come in and get a test because you are with someone who tested positive. And so that's probably how this will work. And we'll have to do contact testing on our campus. I'm not sure. And then the question is, who pays for all these? Tests cost about $100 a piece. Mm-hmm. So if you tested everybody on campus, even asymptomatic people, there's a tremendous cost there. If we feel like we have to do it, we'll do it. But is there another way of doing it? Can the Department of Health help with the cost of doing these tests? Those are all issues we're going to work through throughout the summer.
Have you all been able to get some help with the federal government through maybe the CARES Act or some other things in that to be able to kind of help with some of those costs or maybe future costs that might come?
Yeah, well, hopefully there'll be more money coming in from the CARES Act, federal government, or even the state. The state's kind of tapped out, I think, on their capacity. I think that because the federal government's more capable of adding more money to help out with this. We got $9.2 million in federal money through the CARES Act. 4.6 million of that went directly to students. So they gave it to us, and then we gave it to all the students who were eligible. And then that left $4.6 million left. We used part of that money to provide refunds for students who moved out of their dorms. And so, and that was a good lot of money. That only left about $1.9 million left after all that. So the $9.2 million we got, we have about $1.9 million left. And so we should, and that money is dedicated to doing things that are related to the COVID virus. You can't just fold that into your budget. And so we'll have some resources available there. And there may be, throughout this summer, the federal government may come back and say, for colleges and universities that are going back, we provide X amount of money to help with testing and contact tracing. Because you have to hire contact tracers. You have to hire people who will call people to find out if they're positive. And so I think there's a real momentum, both at the state and the federal level, for colleges and universities to go back, even for K-12. But they've got the same problem, K-12, that we have. In some ways, it's worse. Some ways, it's better. We're a residential campus. Those children are not living on campuses. But we have a more mature clientele here, both employees and staff, more likely to follow the social distancing rules. It's awfully hard to have kindergartners and first graders and second graders follow those same social distancing rules as closely as we'll be able to. So they've got challenges as well. So I think there'll be more resources brought on board for this so that colleges, universities, and K-12 aren't on their own here.
Dr. Danfus, I really appreciate your time. Some people have been concerned about what COVID-19 has done to higher education by way of, I know the higher education's taken a hit. You talked about the budget earlier. Can you kind of give us information on where the budget stands right now and how COVID-19 has impacted Arkansas State?
Yeah, it's almost impossible to know exactly what the cost of this has been to us, but we're tracking that. But we can track specific costs, like we had to buy masks for all of our employees. And so we know how much that cost us. Now, that was important for me. If I'm going to ask our employees to come to work and require them to wear a mask, I felt like we were responsible for providing at least one mask, and we may do more of those. But so those are specific costs that you can count. Other costs you can't really see. First off, there's a human toll of this. I mean, people working from home, people trying to manage their lives, people have all these kind of stressors that are going on. We may never know kind of secondary effects that COVID-19 will have on people's lives. Did people gain weight? We know we did. I did. Did that affect my health because of that? Am I more stressed out? I'm certainly feeling a lot more stressed in June of 2020 than I was in June of 2019. June of 2019, I was like, whew, take a couple of weeks off here. Well, I'm not going to have a vacation until, maybe summer of 2022, which is fine. There's the untold cost there. What is a huge concern for all higher education is on enrollment, because most public institutions, even private institutions, are tuition dependent. And if students decide either I'm not going to go because I'm afraid I'll get sick, or I'm not going to go because I don't want to take online classes, and they don't think the quality of the instruction will be good. And if students stay away, that'll have a huge impact on everyone's experience, and higher education will be no different. And what will happen to us could be a tremendous loss if many, many students stay away because we depend so much on tuition. So we built our budget this year on a 10% decline on enrollment. Now, all of our indicators are actually pretty good. Flat enrollment, maybe even increased. We might have more freshmen this year than we had last year. The problem is we just don't know. Will students who live in the Jonesboro area that got accepted somewhere else be more likely to stay here because they want to stay close to home? Will students from Missouri who got accepted here, who normally would have come, but now their parents are asking them to stay home, will that affect our enrollment? It's just what happens to a young person whose parent lost their job, both parents lost their job, and now they don't have tuition money available to them. Yeah. And so all of those things could negatively affect tuition. And when that happens, or enrollment, when that happens, our tuition revenue is down. then that affects things tremendously. So we built a very conservative budget. We'd already built next year's budget in February, and then COVID hit in March. And really, the reality of COVID hit in March. I mean, COVID was already happening before that. But the reality of the impact of COVID, the long-term impact of COVID on our budget and our operations really hit in March. And so we had to go back in April and rebuild next year's budget. And we know we'll get less money from the state because just business operations are not happening at the same rate they were before. So we have less income from the state. And if we have less enrollment, that affects our budget overall. So the good news is that we have plenty of reserves at the university, and that's because of good stewardship over the years. And we're not going to have to furlough or lay anybody off. Furloughing is basically telling people to take a day off without pay. It's just a cut in pay, basically. And then laying people off, of course, is just laying people off and people are suddenly unemployed. We won't have to do any of that in our current budget that we've written for FY21, which is next year's budget. Now, if our enrollment numbers actually exceed where we are, where we've predicted, then we'll have a little bit of extra money left. We can have a little bit more flexibility. And we'll know more about that in January. But if enrollment numbers are worse than we predicted, then we'll have to start looking harder at using our reserves. And so, or some other option. Now, our current budget doesn't use any of the reserves at all, which is good. So many universities are furloughing people, laying people off, and then using their reserves. We're not doing any of those three options for FY21. But we're holding those in reserve in case we need to use them if enrollment just drops through the floor.
Right. Well, I hope that everything does work out well. I know that we've been in phase one here at the university. And so could you explain for those people kind of what Arkansas State looks like right now by way of the phase one that you're doing, and what is the criteria? I hate to make this a double punch question, but what's the criteria for maybe opening up for phase two?
Well, we'll depend on the governor a lot for that. The governor's guidance and the Department of Health guidance there. But phase one is our first step towards bringing people back onto campus. And phase one is actually a pretty limited scope there. For example, you worked on campus through the pre-phase one. That and those, everyone who worked on campus was identified as a critical or essential employee. And we had a very limited number of people on campus then. Now what we're doing in phase one is we're turning those critical employees into essential employees and allowing supervisors to bring people back if they need to be on campus. There are some people who can work from campus or can work from home, but it'd be a little easier if they were on campus. And so their supervisors are now able to make a case, I really need to bring these three people back because their work is just so much easier if they can be together in the same room. There are other people who just can't work from home. They're just, say for example, janitorial staff. You can't be a janitor from your house. You have to be on campus to be a janitor. So some of those people will come back to campus as well. But only if we've got jobs for them to do. So if we've got a project lined up, for example, if we need painters to come back onto campus, or if we need our carpenters to come back on campus, or if we need to start deep cleaning the residence halls, the supervisors will be allowed to bring those people back. So now we're looking at essential personnel or about critical personnel, people who we need to have on campus. And this is a slow phased in approach. The next step will be when the governor says that state employees may return back to work. Right now, he's asking all state employees who can work from home to continue working from home. And we'll stay in phase one. That's our status until he says otherwise. When he says state employees can now go back to work and practice social distancing and so on, that's when we'll bring that in. I don't anticipate that happening till late June. It may happen earlier, but for many of our operations, because we don't have students on campus, or many students, we still have about 250 students on campus, but because we don't have many students on campus, not very many classes being taught on campus, most of our classes are being taught online this summer. There's not a lot of need for people to be here, but I think you'll start you'll see something like that late June, early July, start seeing more people come back to campus. The good thing is that that gives us time to finalize our plans. Like, what does it mean for someone to come back to campus? And as you know, when you come onto campus, we ask you to take a survey every day and say, have you had any of these symptoms? Have you traveled to any of these places? We need to make sure that everyone who comes back onto campus has access to that survey, because that's part of the monitoring process. In addition, there's another category of groups, though, that we have to pay attention to. And it's the folks who can't work from home, but also for health reasons, can't come to campus because they're vulnerable because of the health issues.
Right.
And we've classified those people as category three people. They're high risk health-wise, and we'll continue protecting those people at the highest level we can by allowing them to stay at home or to work from home as long as possible, even if that means through December and beyond. We will do everything we can to keep everyone safe, especially those who are the highest risk category. And that's, you know, the CDC has guidelines, people of a certain age, people of certain health issues, and so on.
All right. Well, one more question, and I know that we're going to be having more of these conversations as we go, you know, back to our regular A-State connections. We're bringing it back now after, you know, just to let you know, we had it off for a while because NPR was providing some coronavirus coverage. It was right when everything was going on. We went to a lot of NPR programming, even though we were still doing local stuff as well. We just kind of suspended A-State connections for a little bit, but we're bringing it back now. So we want to be able to make sure that we're bringing you back as well on a more regular basis, if that's okay.
Sure.
One thing that I know people have already talked about as we try to go back to normal is, what will the football season look like? What would game day look like at Arkansas State? Is there a way to even be able to know what you know, is football scheduled for the fall? Are we going to even have games?
That's a great question. I get asked that a lot. And the answer is that it's a terrible answer. I don't know. But here's what we are planning. We are planning to have our first football game, I believe. I forget what day it is. It's in September. Mm-hmm. I think it's September 12th for some reason. That's the time, that's the day that sticks in my mind, that we will have a football game that day. We're bringing student athletes back to campus this summer in preparation for that. Now, it may look a lot different than it did last year on that date, because we may restrict the number of people who can come into the stadium. I saw a plan today from a Big 12 school is saying we have a 60,000 seat stadium, but we're only going to admit 30,000 people into the stands. So only half as many people can come in, and you can sit together in family groups, but you have to keep 6 feet apart from each other. So really only season ticket holders will be probably allowed to enter that game for them. So football teams, athletic departments across the country are coming up with plans. There's been some talk about having games without fans. And there are others that are saying, well, you know, what if everyone wear masks like they did in the 1918 epidemic? There are great pictures from a Georgia Tech football game where everyone in the stands was just wearing a mask and they're watching the game. And so there are some football programs that will want to bring everybody back, and some that will bring some back. There are some who are saying we won't play at all. And then that becomes a very political issue. If one team in a conference says we're not going to play, does that shut down the whole conference? And so it's going to be a very interesting summer leading up to football season. As far as we're concerned, we hope to be playing football in the fall, and we hope to have it as normal as possible, with the proviso that everything we do depends on our ability to do that safely and to have a process in place to keep everyone safe. If we can't do it safely, we won't do it.
That is Arkansas State University's Chancellor, Dr. Kelly Damphus. For A-State Connections, I'm Jonathan Reeves.